We've had so many external guests on the show talking about deploying AI capabilities, but the cool reality is TSIA has been aggressively deploying AI capabilities within our own workflows. And boy, have we learned some lessons along the way. I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today, I'm going to be joined by Jeremy Delatese, who is our Senior Vice President of Software Development and Analytics. He is the executive responsible for building the AI capabilities TSIA has deployed, and he consults with members on this topic. We will be having a candid conversation on lessons learned. So let's get the insight engine humming. Jeremy, welcome back to Tectonic. It's nice to see you. I don't see that much these days because you're in so many meetings planning and deploying AI that I know you're very busy. I ask you on here, you know, not only because you're an expert in deploying AI, but you answer lots of questions from our members on this topic as well. So we're going to get right into it by reviewing common questions you receive from members on how to deploy AI capabilities. So question number one, should we simply wait for our legacy vendors to pull AI into their technology? What do you see in there?
So of course, there's pros and cons. Let's start with the obvious reality. Every enterprise vendor has pulled in AI capabilities over the last decade. Now, with the advent of ChatGPT, we're seeing the large language models, the generative AI, being pulled into all these platforms. This has to be part of your strategy. Change management has always been, will always be difficult. And to consistently yank your people around in and out of particularly your major enterprise applications, it's just disruptive. And so we've had success at TSIA. We have a few major vendors in our stack. They've brought in AI. We've been patient. Sometimes when they bring it in, it's not mature enough to really start to leverage. But with patience, we've seen every one of our major vendors bring some valuable AI innovations to the table. But you did have to wait for it.
But I also, from early days, we were experimenting with tools that were standalone AI tools. Wouldn't you say that from the very beginning?
Absolutely. Out of the gates, very early, we developed an AI task force, and that was their number one job. What is on the market now? Look around the corner to see what's coming next and experiment with these rifle shot AI applications. And some of them have persisted, and we still use them. Yep. Others were more transitory in nature. We used them for a bit. We learned from it. We may have had pilots. We may have actually used them in production to improve sales or to improve success or to improve research. But if one of our major vendors got a capability that was close enough to that rifle shot, we went back to the major vendor to, again, mitigate change management and to also keep our information and data as secure as possible.
I mean, again, that's the benefit if you already have a large vendor in place and you just want to, you know, keep it simple by using them, is what you're saying there. Your data's in place and less change management. But it's funny, I was just talking to a member at the conference in Orlando, and they were talking about their experiences, and they were saying, you know, the concept of sort of one AI platform to rule them all is probably not going to be the reality. So even if you are like, hey, I'm a ABC shop, like everything we do is on ABC platform, in this world right now, you're probably still going to have a mix of leveraging what your main providers have with some specialized AI applications. I'm going to assert for the near future for sure. Would you agree with that in terms of what you're seeing?
Yes, you're going to have a portfolio, and you will not have a one AI to rule them all. Even when we talk about custom solutions later in this conversation, there isn't one tool that's going to be superior on all fronts. And if I may just give an example. So we do use the Google Docs suite for creating content with the research team, with our other departments. And our research analysts recently have been experimenting with Claude. Now, Google's got great AI tools, absolutely phenomenal AI tools. Yep. But Claude's got a real heavy hitting capability around data analysis. Yep. Real-time analysis with interactive charts and dashboards enabling analysts to dig deeper than before. But we just had this conversation in the task force earlier this week. How far should we go with this Claude application, and how long should we wait for Google? And we just put some boundaries in place. So if you're going to put some data into Claude, here are the rules, all right? To make it secure, to scrub it, to make it clean, so on and so forth. But then one of the members of the task force spoke up and said, but wouldn't it be great if when you ask Claude about that data, that it had access to all of TSA's knowledge base. And that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where it becomes a challenge to the organization. We're not going to give Claude access to everything. Mm-hmm. All right. And so you need to pick and choose how you use these rifle shot AI technologies. And part of that is the data handshake. You don't want to try to replicate all of your data in all the systems, and you don't want to give every system access to all of your data. And so can you find a rifle shot application where the data handshake is well-defined, secure, safe, and easy to add value while you wait for your platform? And look, your platform can create net new capabilities. It can also bring these vendors, these other applications into their environment as well.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if I play that back, I mean, it sounds like within the TSA environment, we are creating sort of clear rules of engagement here or guidelines as we are evaluating these AI capabilities as they pop up. So again, I'm seeing it in action, but I just want to clarify for the audience and tell me if I get it wrong. So number one, we have a task force. We are constantly scanning for what are the emerging capabilities because you want to know. When you identify these capabilities, probably one of the first assessments is this shiny new object, which is a standalone AI capability, is it really compelling doing something that our current stack can't do, right? So, oh, Claude, it is. Okay, so if it is, and we think that there's business value there, what are the rules of engagement on how we're going to use it? And we put some scaffolding and some fence around that because it can't be the wild, wild west, and you don't want to stand up a bunch of tools and then you're figuring out like, where's the data going and all that stuff. So then you're using it with guidelines, with bumpers around it, and you're constantly sort of watching if my main vendors actually incorporate this capability or not. And sometimes that could happen quickly, and sometimes it may not, right? I mean, the capability may be, you know, super differentiated and compelling, and there may be a gap there for a while.
Absolutely. And for the task force, well, the first check is security. And so any task force member can do research from the outside looking in into capabilities, and they bring it to the task force and say, is this safe and secure, number one? So they do get permission from the task force that it's acceptable, it meets our guidelines, and that's right there is when we have the bumper set up with how you're going to use it and how you're not going to use it. And then you're right. So it is a waiting game. And sometimes, you know, we've been using an AI vendor for interpreting our calls for years now. We thought that an existing vendor would catch up. They haven't caught up yet, but that was acceptable. And the way in which we use it, the way in which we integrate it makes sense for the organization, and it could persist here for the foreseeable future.
Yep. So one lens on this is, you know, my existing vendors versus am I looking at new AI vendors? Another lens on this is, and this is classic in the world of software, as you know, sort of standard versus custom. Should we be developing unique AI capabilities that are very specialized to us, or should we be expecting that they're going to be common tools so that I don't, you know, sort of the classic buy versus build? What do you see in there?
This excites me. So you can see the smile, you know, jumping off of my face right now.
Well, most of our listeners can't, but I can see it.
You can see it. Right? Hopefully you can hear it somehow. AI is just becoming so easy to use. And one of my philosophies at TSAA for the last decade is we are going to be an API architecture. And so we saw very early on that we need to have a great handle on our data. Right, to really understand what our customers need, how they get value, what their roadblocks are, we need to have proficient data pipelines. We need to be able to see where the data is, where it's going, so on and so forth. When you get your data game together and you can leverage APIs, that's a very freeing experience. You can get your data to turn into whatever you need it to turn into. And so AI, what's happened here in the last 3 years in the blink of an eye, all of a sudden, you know, historically, you point your data and say, give me back something that's very structured and I'm going to input my data in just the absolute perfect way to get a little bit of value. Well, generative AI, it's really flipped the formula. You can send it all sorts of unstructured, big pieces of information, and it can return back to you so much value. So when we look at buy versus build on the build side, it has become so much easier so long as you've got good strategy, you've got good vision, you've got your data in place. Now to leverage these large language models, with our data model intact, I can take a junior JavaScript developer and all of a sudden he can do things that a data scientist couldn't do 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, which is amazing. Which is
the marginal cost to leverage AI mm-hmm. through an API is just so minimal now. There's no reason to not be doing some things on your own.
So, and I'll play this back. You know, I started as a coder, but it's been a long time, man. But I want to test sort of the framing. So in the old world, it was like, hey, I'm using something, quote, off the shelf. And if I need it supported or fixed or whatever, I mean, it's a standard. The other end of the spectrum was, I kind of built this thing pretty much from the ground up. You know, I'm sure, you know, I had some basic capabilities, but what I ended up with was something that was very custom. And the downside was hard to change, hard to maintain, et cetera. You're describing this sort of new animal, this new capability, which is in a software environment that is API enabled, super easy to stand up capabilities, probably to modify them and maintain them. So you're creating a quote custom environment because you're leveraging APIs and you're doing things that are unique to your business, but it is not the old days of super heavy lift, very custom, very hard to change. Did I get that right? Is that framing?
We did. And I think way back in time, we built these monolithic, huge applications with so much spaghetti code intertwined to each individual piece. That became a
We've done some
nightmare.
Of that.
and I've been a part of that too. It's been a nightmare to manage, a nightmare to modify. You end up getting very brittle and stuck. Well, in today's world, you know, we've taken this headless approach, a very modular approach where each individual capability that our customers want in our portal, for example, is its own individual API endpoint. So if you're browsing for content, searching for content, asking a question, providing benchmark data, interpreting a result, behind every single one of those interactions is this small, tiny function that we call an API. Mm-hmm. So as we build these capabilities, and this gets back to the technology as a service playbook, as you build these capabilities for your customers, build them in this modular way, this way that has very low maintenance. But when you build them for your customer, absolutely build that for your internal team. It's the same windshield. We should all be looking at the data and what the data turns into through the same lens. And so that's really been our mantra at TSAA. We're going to build the most desirable capabilities for our customers as possible. And then we're going to make sure that all of our employees can leverage those same capabilities.
You know, it's interesting when you say that, because I think we've all had this experience and it just always blows me away. If you ever, to this day, go to an airline agent and something's wrong, you know, you got to change your flight or they've got to do something for you. You have an app and on your phone, you could literally bring up the app and typically hit one or two buttons and get that done. And you watch that poor agent behind the counter, right? And they're in this old COBOL system and they're hitting like 62 keys to do like one little thing. So it really strikes me what you're saying is this sort of single pane of glass here, that it's a world where whether it's customer facing or employee facing, it's the same view, the same tool set, the same capabilities. And that sounds like a simple thought, but historically that's not been a simple thought. We've had this user facing world, which we make as simple as possible. And then we've had the world that our employees and developers and everybody else deals in, which has been much more complex.
And look, we might be veering off the topic of just AI here, but again, having tight organizational alignment around a customer-centric vision and goal is paying dividends at TSA. So our CRM team, our data operations team, our research team, our product team, they are all on the same page. And yes, there's change management. And yes, we're changing from traditionally human heavy lifts to more digitally enabled and AI enabled processes. But as we go through that change management together, we're all benefiting from just a better experience. And now we know more about our customers than ever. And that leads to deeper engagement, better questions being asked, better answers being provided, and just better research being done by our company.
Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence. So let's get back to the questions that you get from members. And one of them is, what are the strengths and weaknesses of leveraging generic AI models? And sort of explain what that question is, what they're trying to get to, and what your thoughts are on it.
So these generic large language models, you don't need to build them. So it's kind of parallel to our previous part of the conversation here. You can turn them on. You can go to Gemini, you can go to ChatGPT, you can go to a long list of these large generic models that have been trained on massive data sets.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Massive data sets. I mean, it's unimaginable how much data has gone into building these models and human labor. And so you've got people that are testing how these language models are reacting and answering questions and behaving. And so it's a massive investment on a scale that, quite frankly, an SMB would never try to recreate. Most companies have no business trying to build out these massive large language models. They're really good. They're cheap. You can host them yourself or rely on the hosted services. And that's the biggest benefit. It's off the shelf. And if all you're seeking are unstructured responses, you know, give me an answer, give me a dialogue, look up some data, do some calculations. Heck, even with some of these deep research capabilities, here's my question, go find 20 resources, summarize them for me. It would be foolish to try to recreate all of that. And so that's the biggest benefit, is that the large language model, provided you have a human in the loop, interpreting the output side by side, you're going to get a lot of value. Every employee or company should be using generic large language models to improve their productivity, hands down.
For tests. And so now contrast to the audience to the concept of a fine-tuned model, a specialized model. Explain the difference of what that is.
So when you get back to how the large language model was created, again, it's going out and getting a bunch of public information. And there are these humans that are in the loop teaching it. You did well on that. You did poor on that. You did well on that. You did poor on that. That creates a powerful capability. But when you try to apply it to a very specific set of instructions or a very specific example, you're going to find shortcomings. And so how I've been affectionately referring to some of the large language models, and I'm not going to name the names here because they're all amazing. I could never build these LLMs by myself. They're not this perfect soldier that can follow the marching orders down to a T. Mm-hmm. I kind of refer them, it's kind of like a temperamental teenager, right? They're good, they're smart, they're bright. But if you give them a long list of instructions, be prepared for that LLM to mess up and make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so we've really learned this in terms of embedding AI into the portal. And so we've embedded AI into our, you know, a couple of our features. We can talk about that later if you like. But we found that if it's a very simple task, given the instructions paired with what the user types in, great outcome. But there's a threshold there. And for us, honestly, what we thought was simple wasn't. And so we found that in particular for this most recent launch of AI inquiry, that what we needed it to do and follow through on the various layers of decision-making and rationalization, the generic models just were not working. So what does that mean? It means that I now had to jump into the process of teaching the model what was good and what was bad. And this has just become so much easier. When these models first came out about 2-3 years ago, it was very hard to fine-tune a model. Today, again, work with a technical person that can get the data in the right shape. So for us, again, we were trying to answer questions. We give the model a question, it would follow through on the instructions and give us the answer, and I would critique it. And I would say, this was good, this was bad, this is perfect. I was the expert, so you need to have an expert here in this context. The developer that was working with me would take the expert's feedback, feed it to the model, and we just iterated and iterated. And we did dozens of iterations where we were basically just trying to get this large language model to follow our instructions precisely. And so that's what fine-tuning does. And so now we have our own saved versions of large language models that carry out our work for us on our behalf. They don't keep our content from a TSA research and publication perspective. What they retain is how to answer a question like a TSA researcher or professional would answer a question.
So I hear two things there in terms of the fine-tuned model, and we've learned, and it's one of the reasons I want to have you on here, is, right, is we learned a lot because we're a research institute and we have all of this content. We have all this research, we have all these data points, and we've been trying to figure out how do you best leverage Gen AI for a member experience to serve up you know, insights on that, right? So you don't have to talk to somebody. You can just like you go to ChatGPT and you ask it a question about whatever, you can come to TSIA. But to what you're describing, it's like we wanted to make sure that it was a high quality answer. And there's two things there, right? And again, you keep me honest. I mean, one is the model is leveraging our proprietary content. So everybody out there, you're a, you know, a company and you have a support agent you're building fed by your product information and your support case information, whatever. Everybody has data that's very unique to their environment that you want to put into these models. But the second thing you said there is then the way the model responds is you need to tune it so it's coming up with quality answers for your world. So you had to do both those things. Feed it your proprietary, like I say, they don't keep it, but it's processing off of your unique information and you're teaching it how to deal with your unique information. Did I get that right?
That's absolutely correct. And so when someone publishes content at TSIA, it's immediately available for our agent to grab. And then when it grabs content to answer a question, it is going through very specific instructions. Not for the first time. It's gone through those instructions with an expert and it's learned the ins and the outs and the boundaries and what's good and what's bad. And that is going to be an ongoing process. We're not done fine-tuning. We're going to keep watching the data come in. It's always an expert in the loop here. We're never feeding it customer data ever. But we have found that it's not just come up with good instructions and good data. It's good instructions, good data, and expert training to save your own versions of these models. That is the winning ticket.
So let's click into a little bit on the skill set there, right? So I think this is an interesting journey as well. I mean, when you joined us, your responsibilities included, you know, managing the software stack, which is very traditional software. For your first thing when you joined us was really around just data and analytics, but very traditional data and analytics capabilities, you know, a team. So now this whole AI thing comes along and, you know, you look at your current team of software developers and data analysts, et cetera, and now you've got to basically morph into a capability that can do the things you're talking about, right? Fine-tuning models, et cetera. Talk about that journey in terms of skill set. Is that an update on the skills of your software developers? Is that net new types of profiles of resources? What does that look like? Because everyone who's listening is going, okay, I got to go through that journey and skills is going to be an issue. Like, I don't know if I have people that can do what you're talking about, Jeremy. So yeah, how did you source that?
Great question. So you absolutely need system thinkers on your teams. So can they, you know, first principles, break down a problem, diagram out a solution, see the big picture. And that's often where, whether I'm working with the data engineers, the software engineers, the product managers, we're going to the whiteboard and we're going to decompose a problem into all of its steps. And that decomposition is really important just for having an environment that is very modular in its nature and doesn't become brittle and monolithic, right? Mm-hmm. So you need system thinkers. Now, as I look at the different people and roles that have been able to leverage AI, most of them, in addition to being system thinkers, they are detail-oriented. Look, I've seen designers just leverage AI incredibly well. I've seen more creative people leverage AI incredibly well for what they're doing. But in terms of generating these AI capabilities for your customers, I think ego is probably the most important thing to address. And so what I mean by that, there are some developers that they just love solving the problems by themselves. And they don't want to embrace a growth mindset that has something else helping do the thinking and helping do the heavy lifting. I can't fix that. I can't nurture that. I can't help that person grow. So if you're a system thinker, you've got a growth mindset, and you're open to your job profile being different, that is the winning strategy. And so I've got data engineers, data analysts, software engineers. Are they still developing code? Yes. Are they still analyzing data? Yes. Are they still solving these hard problems? Yes. How they do it is different. And second, the types of problems they're able to solve, that is the exciting part. And we've developed some really cool text analytic solutions over the past decade. It was really, really hard. But again, when you got all the data in the order and you got like all the information set up for someone, the best we could do is give a human a bunch of information and hope they took action on it, hope they understood it, hope they got a value from it. Now, with these generative AI capabilities, you can go so much farther and deeper in terms of creating value and ensuring that value is realized for your colleagues, for your customers. And so I've got the same profiles. I have not really had to hire any differently. I do ask for, you know, tell me what you've learned about AI in the last week. If I'm going to be interviewing people, I want to make sure that they are learners and they've got that growth mindset. But it's a great transition story. And so I think for the developers out there, those engineers out there, there is a bright future for you. I don't see any roadblocks.
So I'm going to play that back because I think what's super interesting in what you just said, you're like, hey, I had existing team. It was not about me going out and hiring some kind of magical net new resource. Like, oh, I hired an AI data scientist. I hired an AI developer. I hired an AI architect. I mean, I didn't hear any of that. What I heard was I had my current team and it's the profile of that team. And this is really important. So not big on ego, very inquisitive and open to the fact that literally the way they're doing their job is going to change. It's going to change. And if somebody has a big ego, not inquisitive, and really is not interested in changing the way they work, that's a deal breaker in today's environment. And why I'm reviewing that here is I am going to assert that what you just described, that applies to every role and function in your company. As you know, we're researchers. We're going on a journey with the research team, the same thing. The way you used to do research, your workflows, you have to be super open that that is going to be different in this new world. And it's very clear that researchers that embrace that are going to be very successful in this new world. So anybody listening to this, really take this to heart from two lenses. Number one, if you're going on this journey and you think it's net new people, it's probably not. And number two, as you're looking at yourself and the people on your team, these are the attributes you're looking for if you're going to go through this type of journey where you're coming out the other side, where you really are effectively leveraging these new capabilities that are available to us. So yeah, I think that's an interesting story. But so I want to keep going through some of the questions I had here, because I know another big question you get from members is around AI agents. And there's so much hype on AI agents. We've talked about them on this podcast. I mean, there's, you know, and the question that you get from folks is, oh my God, how many agents do you think we should be building? It's like, this 10 agents? Is this 100 agents? Is this one agent to rule them all? So what's your guidance there?
So the guidance here, it's a similar story that we've been learning with our members together over the decades. You need a really good foundation. You need standard operating procedures. You need to understand what creates value for your customers. What are their questions? It needs to be written down. And what we have found with agents, and again, I kind of shared this earlier, our bar of what we thought was simple was actually too high. And we found that actually you have to really, really simplify this. You have to make the instructions not incredibly complicated, not incredibly long, to make sure that when you give the data and the information to this large language model, it's as easy of a problem to solve as possible.
Okay.
So when you think about, oh, I want to create a digital CSM, start with, I want to automate one of the standard operating procedures or one of the core functions that my CSM provides for our customers. Let's write down the five top things that a CSM can do for a customer. Maybe it's scheduling. Maybe it's escalating things. Maybe it is, you know, creating a vision and strategy for how they get value from your platform. Write these things down. And then the challenge is, can you write them down really well? Can you write them down so well that a teenager can do it if provided the right information at the right time with really good instructions? And so that's the number one learning lesson for me, is stop thinking about replacing people, replacing individual roles, start thinking about the specific capabilities that you want to be built. And in the agent space, we're going to call these tools. Each agent can execute somewhere between 3 to 5 tools. That's it. You might ask a human, you know, some of your top performing CSMs to do 10, 12 different things. Each agent can only do 3 to 5.
Why is that? Help me understand.
They still get confused. And again, it gets back to what an individual LLM can execute in a given moment in time, and you want to keep it simple. And so when you see excellently deployed agents, what you're typically seeing is there's a conversational agent on the top that's really good. And this is kind of back to like traditional support services at routing what the customer wants to the right underlying resource. Mm-hmm. Instead of routing it to the right support services engineer, you're going to route it to the correct agent. So maybe you have a scheduling agent. Maybe you have a vision and strategy agent. Maybe you have a renewal specialist, and not the entire renewal specialist stack, but a particular part of the renewal specialist capabilities. So a conversational agent at the top, and then underneath, there are different layers of agents that can solve very specific problems. So to the customer, it probably just seems like, oh, this is the TSIA intelligence. This is just the TSIA agent that I'm working with, or so on and so forth. But under the hood, you have rifle shot agents that typically an individual agent is doing less than a human role that you might find at your company.
So again, playing that back, and I'm just going to use what the example you opened up with, because I mean, you think about, I was just literally talking to a member, 2 months ago about customer success. And this is a company that has been around for a while, kind of very traditional hardware company, and never really had customer success. And they're like, you know, we want to do this thing. And they said, but we're thinking like we leapfrog. Instead of investing in customer success and hiring people and all this stuff, we just go digital. Like we just go jump right over and take advantage of AI, and we just have all CSM agents. And our coaching to them, which thankfully is aligned with what you just said, it was that if you don't understand the CS workflows and the processes and how to execute those with a person, it's going to be super hard to just snap your fingers and digitize all that and make it an agent. And so what you said is, look, don't think about, I'm going to just go digital CSM completely. Think about what are the functions our CSMs are doing and which one of those are well-defined. We understand what it is. We could digitize those first. And eventually, you're going to eat through a lot of the processes that they're doing, right? I mean, and so maybe 60% of what they're doing today suddenly becomes a more digital experience. But you don't come out of the gate thinking you're just going to take that and make that 100%, because what I'm hearing is, you know, the agents aren't there yet, and most companies do not have all those processes defined well enough to do that. Did I get that right?
Absolutely. And so chicken before the egg here, who's going to define the process? Now, trust me, go out and get AI to brainstorm with you to create what are the processes that I need? What does a good process look like? But then it needs to be tested. And again, I would rather have a human fill in the gaps. There are going to be gaps. I'd rather have a human to fill in the gap than a large language model at this point, because you just, hallucinations are a thing. Bad customer experiences with agents are a thing. Could happen with humans, of course, but as of right now, even if you build out and you're able to execute and digitize process 1, 2, 3, 4, and on down the line, I still want to have these AI-enabled and empowered CSMs at the chair. Now, not as many as you started with, right? Not as many, but you still need to have those experts in the loop. And what those experts do, yes, they're still customer-facing. Yes, they're still filling in the gaps for a customer success role, but they're also helping to build up that knowledge base and train those agents that we spoke of. And so that could be, you know, if you're looking at the CSM profile, again, it gets back to our early conversation, are they open to doing their work differently in the future? Do they need to be with the customer face-to-face for a fulfilling job? Or are they willing to say, actually, part of my job is to make sure that customer success at my company is as impactful for the customer as possible, even if that means that I have a machine doing it for me on part of my job? And if they're okay to that future, hire them, keep them on board, and excel together.
And I want to pause on that point because, again, this theme here about people have to be open to working differently. I've seen this, you know, personally in TSI. I've heard this from members. People don't want to let go of certain things they do because they do feel like, oh my God, this is super high value add. This is how I add a lot of value to the customer because I dot, dot, dot. And what you just said is maybe that dot, 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 scheduling this call, doing this thing, doing whatever. If an AI agent can do that effectively, that's going to be a better experience for the customer. It's going to happen faster, and you got to be okay with letting that go so you can go do something else. And it sounds like that's a no-brainer, but that's not how it plays out, especially with customer-facing roles, whether you're sales or services. There's a premium put on the fact that I'm, quote, interacting with the customer. And anything, Jeremy, you put on the table that says, I don't have to interact with them around that anymore, I feel like, oh, crap, you're taking value away. You're taking, you know, my value away. And you got to get over that because some of this stuff is just going to be better executed by technology.
Again, it comes back to that growth mindset. It comes back to the culture. And again, I can't fix those things. I can set the seeds of the culture for my team. But if you have individuals that don't want to embrace that, you can't fix that. And so you have to get the right people on the bus. And again, it's exciting. You're still your customer CSM. There's still a relationship. But what's different? You have more relationships, you have more customers, and when you get involved, it's similar to your climbing the value ladder. Now, you are doing more valuable things with your customers. Trust me, I still cling to this. I still hold this as a truth. If you're getting AI to build something for you, let's say it's building code for you, you better be an expert on code. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're not, if you have the build things for you that you don't understand, at some point it's going to break. At some point you're going to want to change it. At some point you're going to modify it. And if you don't understand code whatsoever, you're going to better hire somebody that does. So whatever your role is, design, customer experience, again, come alongside AI, make it better, help it make you extend your reach, make yourself more powerful. You always be needed to fill in the gaps moving forward and to, again, to help improve it.
Yeah. One of the main reasons we founded TSIA almost 20 years ago was to establish accurate operational benchmarks for technology service businesses that just didn't exist anywhere. Benchmarking is a killer tool to quickly understand your strengths and weaknesses. Benchmarking sets you on a journey that starts with where you are, points to what is possible, and identifies the business practices that will get you there. That's why I am super excited we decided to offer a free version of TSI's industry-leading benchmarks with Performance Optimizer. Performance Optimizer is an easy-to-use benchmarking tool you can access from the TSI website. You can assess operational strengths and weaknesses in multiple areas like customer success, professional services, support services, etc. And the Optimizer results prescribe specific actions to address specific challenges and opportunities. This is an amazing offer, and I am so proud we are doing this for all of our loyal Tectonic listeners who may not be corporate TSIA members. To check it out, visit tsia.com/free. So this is a little bit of a rabbit trail here, but so you and I occasionally, well, I always listen to the All In podcast, the tech podcast,
yes,
and you listen to it. They just had a conversation on the one they dropped on Friday about agents specifically. Did you hear it?
Yeah. Missed it. It's on my save list. I have not listened to it yet.
So listen to it. And I'm going to put two things on the table on that before you listen to it. In the audience, I encourage you to listen to it as well because it is a good discussion. But here's my two observations. One is, you know, a lot of the discussion around AI agents is still being these really broad strokes. And even those guys on that podcast or quote techies, you know, I think they were missing the mark on sort of the more nuanced things that you're talking about, sort of the practicality of implementing where this thing really is, you know, versus hype. And, you know, in some like, oh, there, it's all hype. There's really nothing there, which is, that's not true. And it's also, it's not, you know, solving world hunger yet. But anyway, I think it's very reflective of how confused people are on this conversation and not in the practical reality. In the practical reality, there is there for sure. And the one use case that one of the guests who has a transport company made is a great example of the power of AI agents. So they have a very simple task, very well defined, of reaching out to drivers to offer them particular loads to move stuff, et cetera. But that process historically has been very labor-driven, manual-driven. Some, you know, operator is doing it and you only can make so many of these calls, et cetera. They now have agents that are contacting these drivers, you know, making this offer, whatever, getting the information back real time. That right there, not only made it more cost effectively, but they are able to do a volume of this outreach and scheduling that they could have never hoped to do with labor, right? It would just been way cost prohibitive. So you take a task, well-defined, clear, put an agent on it, that whole task becomes exponentially better. And there are use cases like that out there again and again and again in companies. So that to me is the journey companies should be on, is have well-defined processes, understand your processes, take the ones that are well-defined, start to see where you can apply the technology, get the benefit, move on, you know, rinse and repeat basically. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And you can write down current processes, but you can also write down the future processes that you should have been doing all along that you couldn't do, now that you should. And then again, you kept saying in that example, and it was in my head as well, that is an incredibly well-defined problem. That is, I'm going to call that basic mathematics. That's not even calculus.
Right.
It is algebra. And the data, if you've got a good data system in place, you feed that data system into a simple formula, essentially at that point. Can the agent, you know, execute formulas with a little bit of human, you know, interaction at the end of it? Absolutely, it can. That's a perfect one. That is a lot easier than some of the problems we've had to solve at TSIA in the past couple of years. I wish I had that one. But absolutely, you know, can an agent take over that entire industry? No.
No.
But are there those certain processes that it can do better than a human operator? Hands down, yes.
Yeah. Let me ask you one final question on that, this, because I'm keeping an eye on the clock here. And that is this concept of AI operators. So we hear about AI agents. I'm just now hearing about AI operators. Help us understand, what are they?
It is a big question mark for me. I've got a couple of question marks, and we were just discussing these on our task force this past Monday. as we've been talking about agents, so we're being very purpose-built here. We're, you know, you can think of it as a chat experience. You can think of it as whether you're chatting with typing things or actually talking to an agent. You're enabling this interface to execute all these APIs on behalf of a user. All right, so I don't need to schedule a call with another human. I can get my agent to schedule a call with me. Well, that's a tool. My agent has access to this tool to schedule things. My agent has access to crawl TSA's research and provide a great answer. My agent has access to check a benchmark progress and give me some benchmark results. And so that is where our product team, our developers, our engineers are building up this agent, giving it more and more tools so that a customer can come to our agent and have this wonderful user experience. An operator is different in that it can go and access websites that were built for humans, that were built with your traditional, you know, UX, UI. There's drop-down menus, there's a click, there's a drag, type in something here, click next. They're building operators to work with any website.
Yeah.
And so it's meant to scale an individual user's use of and, you know, value realization from existing websites. And so now we're sitting back as a collaborative product team and saying, are we still supposed to build an agent in this world if an operator can work on behalf of a user and just fly through our website anyways? And it's an interesting question from a design perspective. Should we still keep building the UX for a human if operators are being trained to interpret human-designed UX environments? And so it's something that we have our finger on the pulse right now. We're testing operators right now to see how they interact with our portal. It is going to influence our design. It's going to influence our agent strategy. And it will also inform us of any other additional security risks that might be at play here as well. We have our hypotheses. We lean in a certain direction. We still think that you should be building out your own agent experience. Mm-hmm. But that the expectation of operators being in the marketplace should influence how you digitize your business.
You know, as I hear that, I mean, there's tons of legacy software out there, all built for humans to interact with it. I don't care if you're talking about a website. I don't care if you're talking about any traditional enterprise application that we're all using, all built to have a human interact. So it seems like it makes good sense to me if you can have operators that are like, hey, I can navigate that. I can navigate your CRM system as it is. I can, you know, put opportunities in. I can run and get this insight. I can do it. I can navigate your website as is. I mean, that's a really intriguing thought because it's a bit of a shortcut, right? For having to build, you know, agents that are specialized in the way they interact.
It is. And you go back to the beginning of our conversation, you've got these legacy vendors, you know, for your internal employees. Hopefully it's not as bad as the COBOL code that you're seeing at the airport, right? But if it is, you know, anyways, I think internally, so again, our position is we're testing it to see how our own product is crawled and leveraged by operators, but we're also going to test it on internal tools. Does it make our employees' use of our CRM easier? Because our CRM's been around for a while and the operator can figure out things that even some of our best salespeople probably don't know how to do well at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, Jeremy, I really appreciate the conversation. And I think you've got great battle scars on this. I sort of buried the lead a little bit here because your team has been building some killer AI capabilities for us in our, you know, AI inquiry capabilities on our portal. And so, and anybody listening here, I encourage you to go out, just go to our portal. There's a freemium account for members. And you can, you know, if you're not a member, you can do some of these AI inquiries in, against a model that is highly tuned, as we just discussed, to our content and the kind of questions that our customers ask. And I've been using the tool since you made it available to the researchers. And it just blows my mind how powerful it is, you know, and insightful it is. So that is the fruition of all the, you know, the kind of work that you've been talking about here. So
it's incredibly fulfilling. And let me share a stat with you. In a matter of 3 business days, we've already received more inquiries than we did in the last year and a half.
Wow. Yeah.
So think about that in terms of now our ability to learn what our customers need us to answer, night and day difference. And so there's, again, I'm coming right back to your research team, Thomas. There's a lot more exciting work for them to do in terms of addressing our customers' needs.
Yeah, for sure. So, hey, Jeremy, if a TSI member is listening and they want to continue to leverage your expertise on this, what's the best way to get a hold of you or connect the dots here?
Absolutely. So again, if you're a member, you know, you have access to the portal, go ahead, ask away, get an inquiry, ask questions about analytics, ask questions about AI. And if you need an expert inquiry, submit an expert inquiry. I'm here for any member, regardless of what your research areas are and or are not. This is such an exciting time to come alongside of you and to really help you figure out a way to leverage data and AI in meaningful ways.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much. And, you know, I always end these with the question of the day. And, you know, my question is simple. And if you are a TSI member and, you know, the question is, are you leveraging the hell out of our research and expertise on practical practices for deploying AI? If you're not, you absolutely should be. Cheers, everybody. Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSI Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence.